Hey everybody, James Tiley, Johnny Fry, Digital Bytes Podcast, as usual. You should be used to it by now, right? The January 26th newsletter went out. Johnny's going to talk to me about it. And after that, we're bringing on an awesome guy that actually can say things that I understand. So I'm going to get to extremely appreciate that. But let's talk about the regular newsletter right now, Johnny.
Cheers, James. Good to be back on the air with you. And hi to all our regular listeners. So just a quick recap. Digital Bytes is a weekly analysis looking at how, where, and why blockchain technology and digital assets are being used in different countries, different industries. And as you mentioned, we're delighted this week we've got Dave Shastri from Truss Edge, and they're in the fund administration business. And as regular listeners will know, every week we try and bring on a guest who comes and talks about what are they doing with the technology or with digital assets? Are they a fan or do they have their sort of, doubts or challenges that they're concerned about? So and this is what we do every week. James and I put on the show. So we're delighted you joined us today. And in this week's edition, we were really looking at the dreaded Bitcoin. And, how many other countries will make it legal tender? And we get a lot of emails and we get a lot of messages saying, where do you get your ideas and thoughts from for different articles? Because every week we typically write about 4,000 words. And there's no adverts in here. It's just purely trying to be thought provoking, give people perhaps a different slant. So there's no advertising in here. And one of the ways we do it is that we often post things on things like LinkedIn or Medium or Facebook. And then off the back of that, we get feedback. People either like the stories, like the ideas, or we get nothing. And so we were very interested. We put a little article just talking about El Salvador had managed to onboard, allegedly, 4 million people within, I think 45 days to get a digital wallet. And that was, they claimed 70% of the people in El Salvador that didn't have a bank account, they signed up and got a digital wallet, which we just thought was quite a big number. But if that's true, and we see other countries copying El Salvador and making Bitcoin legal tender, this could make a huge dent in the 1.7 billion people that don't have a bank account at the moment. And even in the US, in America, it's alleged that there's 63 million individuals who are unbanked or underbanked. And it's costing them, allegedly, as much as $3,000 a year because they've got the wrong bank or they don't have a bank. And this was analysis that we found from Forbes magazine, because, again, as people who subscribe to DigiBytes or get it free, because that's what we do, we use a lot of hyperlinks. So when we come out with a figure like 63 Americans, well, who said that, Johnny? Well, this was from Forbes magazine. But why do people pay more if they don't have a bank account, the wrong bank account? Well, you think of mobile phones. If you don't have a bank account, you have to, top up your phone as you go. Or in the UK, we call it pay as you go. Or if you don't have a bank account, you can't just have, electricity or gas supplied to you for your homes. You perhaps have to have a meter. And so therefore, the cost of actually emptying the meter as you're putting your dollars and dimes and pounds and what have you into the meter, someone's got to actually come around and empty your meter. And so what happens is that the poorest members of our society that are unbanked end up paying more for borrowing money, for consuming services and goods. And that can't be a good thing. So if we can see, digital assets in some shape or form, and in this case, El Salvador, as I said, are going to use Bitcoin as legal tender, then we could actually then see more countries following the suit. But just following on from the LinkedIn article, what we were interested in was on LinkedIn, once you've got a certain number of views, it then gives you a breakdown of the name of the organization that people, where they work, based on what they've told LinkedIn, their industry, and where they live. I thought it was really interesting that the majority of people that have looked at the article, worked at places like Deloitte, Ernst & Young, Goldman Sachs, HSBC, IBM, JP Morgan, PwC, BNP Paribas, big banking and tech type companies. And they're based in, you know, London, New York, Brisbane, San Francisco. Well, okay, Paris. Yeah, okay, fairly tech savvy, you'd have thought, places. But also, you know, in places like Bengaluru in India, or, you know, in Delhi. So we've got a real selection. And we just wonder whether financial institutions, consulting businesses saying, look, we're giving advice, or we're trying to attract new customers. And there's 1.7 billion of the world population that aren't currently accessing financial services or bank accounts. And maybe we need to keep an eye on these other ways of attracting people into the ecosystem. And if we're going to see places like Panama, Paraguay, Guatemala, they're all rumored to be following El Salvador's sort of lead and start making Bitcoin legal tender. So, yeah, so that was one article we wrote this week looking at the potential impact and whether indeed that's true, that 70% of the unbanked people in one country signed up within a matter of literally 4 or 5 weeks to have a digital wallet. We thought that was quite an interesting bit of information to share with people.
And it would make absolute sense to me where it's neighboring countries as it grows, kind of like a bleed over, if you will.
Yeah. As it spreads from one sort of jurisdiction to another. So the other article that we did have was, I just really want to bring people's attention, was sort of crypto crashing, the test of endurance. And we actually wrote this article and then subsequently, literally in the last couple of days, popped it onto a couple of social media sites. And that's generated a lot of talk and a lot of feedback. And to praise it, people are saying, well, look, cryptos, yes, they're really volatile. That's why you shouldn't touch them, because you can lose your money. And then the other argument, and I'd say the majority of people that responded said, yes, they're really volatile. That's the point of them, because they're meant to be volatile. They are meant to therefore present interesting opportunities, but you need to be careful because you can lose your money. And even, you know, at the moment, you know, with given the price of Bitcoin, and it's the 28th of January at the moment, and Bitcoin's hovering around about sort of $34,000. Okay, it's come down from over $60,000, but this time last year, it's still up 20%. So yes, it's gone zooming up and it's come back down. But we were really trying to sort of draw people's attention that these markets, yes, they are very volatile. And, you know, I know coming up after the break, Dave Shastri will say the institutions are trying to make their minds up, and how do they get their clients exposed to this asset class? Because their clients are asking about it. For regular listeners, you remember a couple of weeks ago, we had Peter Habernacker from Arrow Capital, and they run a fund of cryptos, a fund of funds. And he was saying that their research is showing that, you know, it makes sense to have up to 5% of your money. So if you take that as read and say, well, okay, I want to have some money exposed to this asset class, how do I go about it? And it's that very same question that whether you're a big institutional pension fund, or whether you're, you know, a family wealth, a family office looking for it, or whether you're just Joe Public and you're saying, well, how do I get exposure to that sector? And that's what we're seeing more and more people are asking that question. And we have to accept that along the way, we will see, you know, dips in the market. We will see the markets fall. But, you know, this year we've definitely had a bad start in terms of the price of some of the different cryptocurrencies. But again, as we've advocated many, many times, whilst we, you know, we're not here to give financial advice, you know, if something is really, really volatile, you know, a way to get exposure to it is via regular savings, by sort of dripping money into an asset class. And then you buy more when the price is low and you buy less when the price is high. And that's called dollar cost or pound cost averaging. And that seems to make a lot of sense with, you know, something like, you know, cryptocurrencies, because they are really, really volatile.
You know, there's a tremendous difference between, you know, day trading, swing trading, investing, right? So even if you treat it like equities, some people are going to buy a blue chip equity and say, all right, 30 years from now, when I'm ready to retire, I'll sell it. In which case, it's safe to say you'll be all right. But then you got your day traders that are just up and down, looking for the VWAP. I think all the same rules apply. The timeline might be askewed, but it's all the same rules.
Yeah, yeah.
My opinion, of course.
I suppose the only thing is that when you have a new asset class come along that's backed on sort of, if you like, a new technology, although to be fair, blockchain technology itself has been around, or distributed ledger technology has been around since the 70s. So it's tough to say it's really new, but you know, cryptocurrency is the first one really, you know, it's only what, 12 years this year, I think it is, Bitcoin.
13.
It does, yeah. And it's, you know, I was with Well, actually, do you remember we had that great interview the other day with Brian Coyne, who from Casey Investments, and he was the derivative trader that has turned from greed is good to actually, you know, looking for the community. And that's been his experience as he's come from, you know, the 80s and 90s in derivatives trading and now involved with Casey Holdings, where it's a company that invests in crypto holdings. And it was interesting talking to him earlier this week. And looking at different types of asset classes and how, if you like, how people's attitudes change. And as he said, well, Johnny, you know, we're struggling to get our heads around. And I hope Brian doesn't mind me saying it, but it's too late, so I'm going to say it. We're struggling to find, you know, why is, you know, Worm NFT worth a dollar, yet Bored Ape Yacht Club is worth, you know, many millions of dollars. You know, what are these NFTs? How do you price them? How do you value them? And it, to some extent, I see the non-fungible token market going through a little bit of the same situation, I suppose, cryptocurrencies were going through a few years ago, where people had heard of them, people had traded them, some people had made money out of them. Some people were a bit worried that they weren't able to get involved because, you know, have they gone up too much? And it'll take a while for a new asset class to settle down. And it's appropriate for some and not appropriate for others. And that's kind of the learning curve that people have to go through to decide whether it is indeed appropriate for them to get involved in the first case. But underneath all of this is what underpins this asset class, and that's the technology of blockchain. And again, apologies for regular listeners, but we truly believe that it's the technology that can create, you know, loyalty tokens such as for Cyber.fm. So for regular listeners, you're now being paid to listen to me rattle on, and you're being paid to listen. A lot of people say it's a good thing. So you wouldn't listen to me if you weren't being paid, but that's a different issue. But the underlying technology of blockchain can do the same thing, whether it's in the metaverse, whether it's to actually digitize, you know, IBM shares or Tesla shares or BNP Paribas shares, you know, or maybe it's debt issued by the World Bank with Commonwealth Bank of Australia. All of this is happening, and we're seeing, you know, efficiencies being created. And probably the most important thing, if we genuinely have an ability to have a more of a community-based spirit, you know, creating a decentralized autonomous organization whereby it's for the benefit of the community, well, that's I think that's a good thing. And if we can see less unbanked people and more inclusivity, I think that's a good thing. And I share that sentiment with many people involved in the industry, that a lot of them do feel very strongly about being more inclusive. As a technology and as an asset class.
Yeah, and like we always, we tend to use the word universal music income, right? We call it a UMI for CyberFM. It's fun. But
yummy.
Yeah, but I would say, going back to what you said with there's a difference between blockchain and cryptocurrency. One requires one, but the other one may not require the latter. So, right. For example, in New York City, at one point, they were giving away Mets tickets, you know, baseball, yep. And Amazon gift cards for people who have been arrested as motivation to come back to court. That's a loyalty scheme, if you think about it.
It is, yeah.
And your arrest record could be on a blockchain.
Yeah, that's true. You wouldn't want to be on a public blockchain, so everyone knows that you're a dodgy fellow there, James.
It might be more secure than it is today, right?
That's true. Okay. Well, James, we better break for you know, a few messages, and then after the break, we've got Dave Shastri from Trust Edge coming up, and we'll take you from there, I think.
Yeah, I like to. He's a good guy, and I got a feeling that I'm going to break my microphone.
Well, in the excitement of going back to your old terminology and acronyms,
I was so excited that I could feel old with other people.
Brilliant. Okay, well, all will be revealed after the break when James has another memory trip, or another trip down memory lane. And and we'll look forward to talking to you again just after the break. Thank you.
Want to have fun? The next time you're in a computer store, set all the laptops to cyber.fm. Go ahead, turn them up real loud. And if the salesperson gets angry, tell them, we told you it was okay. This is cyber.fm.
Hey, everybody. James Tiley back here with Johnny Fry, always bringing good friends over for the second half of the show. I got to tell you, I was reading the newsletter, and for those of you who know my past, when I saw the word financial information exchange, fixed protocol, I was like, yes, I'm best friends already. God forbid we talk about something I know what I'm doing, because it's always over my head with the Digital Bite Show. Johnny, bring on Dave Shastri so I can finally feel good about myself.
Yeah, we've had a bit of a run of
people, either you know them or you know what they're talking about, James. We must try and keep this up because we've got another man from across the pond. Dave, welcome to the show. You're chief strategist at TrustEdge, and thank you for writing the article in this week's Digital Bytes, and welcome to the Digital Bytes show.
Thank you. This is very exciting. And thank you, James, for loving Fix.
That's right, man. That's all I need to hear.
So Dave, you wrote an article entitled Frontier Challenges, Bringing Cryptocurrency Investment to Mainstream Asset Management. But before we get into that, would you mind just giving the listeners a quick overview of your sort of working background and how you got into this? And obviously, if we can try and keep, I know James loves to get techie on me with his high frequency stuff and algorithm trading.
We will so today. Kind of,
but this, as you know, this goes out to just over 4.6 million listeners in 140 odd countries. So we'll try and keep the acronyms to a minimum if we can. But it'd be great just get a bit of background about yourself and what TrustEdge do.
Great. So I'm an old, emphasis on old hand as an investment services person. I started work and life in an international offshore bank that focused in on providing investment services to the fund industry. That includes custody and admin. And you learn a lot about how the rest of the integration of the world works and how important it is to integrate to the rest of the world when you work in an international setting like that. And I've worked through that industry. And then as a result of the different elements of that, I got involved in technology, the back end of the dot-com era, set up and sold a technology firm, and since then have been working in that space. Our company, TrustEdge, was the technology and operations platform inside of a multi-strategy fund firm. And that has been folded out and provides that same platform, which of course is constantly evolving, to other investment firms so that we can provide them with the infrastructure to run their business and grow their business and take the focus for investment managers away from all those things nobody wants to do and lets them focus in on strategy and their client relations. And we do everything else for them. So that's my background and that's the company's background. And TrustEdge services hedge funds, CTAs, the exchange traded fund business, which is actually our largest business, and increasingly, of course, crypto funds. We've learned quite a bit in a short period of time about this, but I'm sure we have a lot more to learn.
Okay, so to summarize, so the TrustEdge itself was a spin out from a hedge fund manager. You say multi-strat, yeah. So obviously yeah. They were employing different trading tactics, the way they manage the fund. So right, you've really right. built the systems from the inside in terms of as a user, rather yeah. than saying, oh, well, we've got a great system, does someone want to buy it? You know your systems work because you had to use them yourselves.
Yeah, we're the largest users. Yeah. If you've worked inside of a firm like that, you understand that the traders are often ahead of everybody else, right? So what you're doing is constantly keeping up with new strategies, new instruments. We did a lot of work as the energy industry started to evolve and become open to non-industrial players, to asset managers, and building instruments to work with that and how they work. And of course, we feel the same way about the crypto markets. Obviously, you have to constantly be enhancing the platform, the integrations, the accounting, every aspect of it gets affected.
So, okay. Yeah. So for our regular listeners, they'll be well aware of this, but Dave, it's been interesting, and this hasn't, we haven't done this on purpose, but I would say the last 3 months, the majority of people that we've had on the show, and, you know, they range from fintech startups through to, you know, big legal firms like sort of DLA Piper or CMS or PwC. So some really big companies as well as small companies, some challenger banks like ClearBank we've had on the show recently. All of them, there's a common theme which is coming through, and that is a lot of the things that, and the systems and processes in, let's say, the traditional financial world, trading of sort of boring things like equities and derivatives and property and commodities, those things, the systems procedures, we're some of the good parts and some of the different parts are being taken and adapted and being used in the digital asset space, the crypto space, whether that's DeFi, NFTs, or just plain simple sort of cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum. And so it's interesting, we're seeing what I call traditional, you know, you're like myself, you're north of 50. So, you know, we've both been around a little bit, and we're able to take some of our learnings in the traditional space and bring them into this new arena. In other words, it's not all just completely new and made up as we're going along.
Yeah, if you come from technology, you also learn that the elements of technology, of pieces of systems, hasn't actually changed. We've increased, you know, bandwidth, we've increased sort of depth, but the actual layers that exist in technology haven't changed. Well, that's the same in finance. There are some fundamental truths that still have to be addressed. And so it's not that you don't embrace the new stuff. Of course, that's very important, but the fundamentals, there are still some things that are quite necessary to make things work. So yeah, that's
okay. And you're in your article, you touched on the survey from Fidelity, in their investor survey, and they were saying that Fidelity thought that sort of 70% of the larger investors are going to have some sort of cryptocurrency exposure in the next few years. Given your knowledge, given your contacts, you know, and I know you travel quite extensively. You're at the moment in Bermuda, but you've been in Miami recently, and I know you're over here in Europe not that long ago. What do you see the appetite, or is it genuine real interest in these cryptocurrency things, or is it just peripheral and it's a lot of skepticism still?
No, I'm convinced it's real interest. In December, we were doing some presentations to managers about, you know, how to get started in a fund, and that's, you know, pretty normal thing. People are always interested in that. And when we were talking to a manager who has nothing to do with the crypto space, he said, "My clients are always asking me, what should we be doing in the crypto space?" So there is true interest. I don't see it as any different. And I guess the reason we call the article Frontier, it has to be accepted that it's a small component, but that does not mean it's not an important and sought after component. And it's real. Everywhere I've gone, this is a continuous discussion. You might get overwhelmed in thinking that's the only thing they're interested in. That's not the case, but it is something new, and they're seeking knowledge. They don't understand it. They want to understand everybody else's perspective on it. And that's a very healthy thing, because they're getting different views from different people with different, levels of understanding, but they will synthesize that and come up with a true sort of picture that suits them and how they might proceed with this market.
Okay. So these are institutional investors that are looking for insight and information and a perspective, in order that they can sort of coalesce that and then sort of go back to their actual clients and say, this is why we're getting involved and how we're getting involved, or this perhaps at this stage why we're not getting involved. So so it's very much sort of a learning iteration process that we're going through at the moment.
Indeed. And you know, you do that with any new composition of a portfolio, right? So that's what this is. You're just deciding whether or not this is part of what you're going to build into your portfolio allocation. And some of them will end up with very boring things, as we discussed earlier on. But composed within that will be a portion of assets allocated to some type of digital asset.
Okay. And although, to be fair, if we see the continual trend of the digitization of real assets and potentially mutual funds, then we could find digital assets becoming a huge component of people's portfolios, because that will include equities, bonds, commodities, you know, real estate, etc. Because there's a lot of friction which potentially technology such as blockchain can actually remove from the system.
Yeah, I'm fundamentally feeling that's the greatest piece. Obviously, the entree today is cryptocurrencies, but the more fundamental structural component will proceed past whatever allocation might be to cryptocurrencies, and we start to evolve our use of blockchain in particular to all sorts of finance.
Okay, and so you've pointed out, you know, what needs to be done. What are some of the things we need to have, do you think, in order to you know, move the continuum along and actually see more investors coming into this space at the moment then?
Yeah, so interestingly, you talked about friction in traditional assets. I think that's ultimately part of what happens here. There are still steps for the portfolio investor, which I'm not talking about the crypto enthusiast who has, you know, focused on that space. I'm talking about the portfolio investor. They need to be able to accomplish many things in managing their portfolio, and you need to keep making that easy for them. And so having a way of dealing with the various types of assets that you're going to hold, the different ways in which they can be acquired, purchased, and custodied or held, because every portfolio investor needs it. Remembering in my mind, and certainly in what I've seen, that they're not interested in any of that level of detail when they're investing in equities and bonds. They just want someone to deal with that. And so the service provider industry that supports these assets needs to be able to evolve so that it's easier to work with the rest of what they do. And that's all I'm getting at. So the reason I raised the use of a common process a common language effectively is what I'm getting at, is that gets rid of a lot of friction. So I might be investing in certain currencies and with certain exchanges, but the movement of activity between them, recognizing that I don't just own one, I own many. If that is simplified, if that's streamlined, if that's creating in a common way, then that will lubricate those processes and make us less uncomfortable with making these investments.
Okay. And do you see any difference in jurisdictions? Do you see Europeans or the Asians or the Americans being more embracive of this asset class?
Yeah, I guess I'm not qualified to say that so much. From what I've seen in my conversations, everyone seems to have an interest in this. Right. I don't think we block walls off on that one.
Right. Okay. And in terms of sort of the institutional managers, some of their sort of operational risks you've sort of highlighted, are there some sort of common things which, you know, people bump up against then from an operational risk management point of view?
Very much. We need robustness in the way in which we operate. An enthusiast will be comfortable and jump into a market and will put up with informational delays, with system changes. They'll accommodate that. Large institutions do not work that way, and you know, we may find that frustrating that they don't work that way, but they don't. And large institutions do things like close off their books towards year end because they don't want any changes and things like that. So exactly. So it's not that they don't understand it's a 24/7 business. That's not the problem. The problem is that they also seek some confidence and surety in every process that takes place. And so I don't think that that's insurmountable. I just think it's very straightforward. Treat this the same way that they're treated, make sure that I can get my assets out if I want to. Don't shut down my system in the middle of the week do an upgrade, those kinds of things. Be robust about the processes. That will go a long way to creating confidence. And new entrants are certainly trying to do that.
Yeah, brilliant. James, I know you're gagging to come in because you saw the Financial Information Exchange, FIX protocol. So I'm sure you got a couple of questions for Dave this afternoon.
What are your thoughts on the article and you know, what Dave's been saying?
So I have this unpopular, right? And I'm gonna try my best to like not name brands or anything like that. I don't advocate for anything. But, you know, talking about what institutional investors, you know, the traditional guys, what they're accustomed to, what they're going to expect. So maybe I got more than one question, but my unpopular opinion, this is my opinion, is that the current cryptocurrency exchanges that exist today, the big ones, really aren't built for the amount of bandwidth and data transfer and resource that even an exchange that's only open 9-12 hours a day can handle, right? At the end of the day, like you brought up fixed protocol is doing what, 50,000 messages per second, right? Do you think that the institutional investors are going to say, I would rather see my current Merrill Edge connect over to what might used to be called Bloomberg Tradebook to fulfill an order? Or are they going to accept going to, you know, Joey's hot new exchange? Because like you mentioned, you know, latency, volume. Yeah. I personally, my opinion is that what we see and what we are actually experiencing are two different things.
Yeah, I think you're probably very right. My strong sense is that if it stays under a very small number for these large firms, then they will happily ignore all the challenges that it brings from their point of view, because they really don't believe it's ready for prime time, if I could use that term. But
right.
But should it start to become larger in a book, and large might be anything north of 1% or 2%, they will clamp down on it. It needs to obey certain processes. And you're exactly right. I would rather it operates against connected to my Bloomberg. You know, if I'm trading using EMSX or something like that, let me do that, right? Because I don't spend time going from platform to platform to platform. I'm not operating in that market solely. I have to obey to all sorts of things. And so the minute you step outside and create this new process and a process that's somewhat disjointed from everything else, then it will become problematic for me, because I cannot tick boxes anymore.
Dave, this goes back to your point about making sure the systems are robust.
Indeed. Indeed. And you know, so there's a lot of constant evolution. And by the way, I get that. We've seen no different in, we talked about Frontier. We saw no different in, you know, any emerging market that's ever been invested in, right? And perhaps people won't like the fact that we call it an emerging market, but that's really the way I look at it. And it can only stay tiny and cannot be allowed to be bigger unless it grows up that piece a bit. And this is not to confuse the fantastic opportunities that the blockchain on the other side of this diagram is with the method of accessing it, if you see my point.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're not saying that blockchain isn't awesome and couldn't be used for lots of things. That's one side of it, but that's only the side that has nothing to do with you and me accessing ownership and holding assets.
Yeah. Brilliant. Well, look, James, I'm mindful we're sort of coming to the end of the show today. Dave, if people want to get in contact with you, or you know, is it the best way on LinkedIn, or contact you through the website TrustEdge?
Yeah, both of those are available, as we take all comers. I'm on LinkedIn. Happily, please just connect with me or send me a message on that. Our website is TrustEdge as opposed to TrustEdge. So it is TrustEdge, .com. And you know, we're easily accessible, there.
Brilliant. And that's Trust, TRUSS
H-E-D-G-E.
Yep, we're holding up the roof. That's the idea.
Fantastic. Holding up the roof. I like that. You perhaps you should change your name to Atlas or something like that. George Atlas.
Perfect.
All right, Dave, thank you very much for coming on. We must get you back later on in the year, because I know you're working on a couple of different projects, and it'd be good to get an update on some of those and as we see more funds coming into the market to get your thoughts and insight on how this is developing. So I think you're absolutely right. We're all learning, and I always get very nervous when people say, oh, you're an expert on this, or I'm an expert in the crypto field. And really? We are all learning so much all the time, and that's one of the reasons that makes it really interesting and exciting.
Oh, it is exciting. And by the way, my article might sound a little, you know, it's not intended to be negative. It's intended to be, you know, let's move this along. That's the purpose of it.
Yeah, Dave, and that strikes a note with what we're doing, because we don't want to be evangelical about the technology or the assets. It's good for people to you know, to appreciate that this isn't just a one-way street.
Perfect.
Yeah, there's certain conversations that just have to be had.
Indeed.
Yeah. James, thank you very much again for this week's show. And obviously, if anyone wants to have a copy of Digital Bytes, we send out every Wednesday, then just please contact James Tiley at cyber.fm or myself, Johnny Fry, JONNYFRY, on LinkedIn. You know, happily send you a copy of the regular weekly analysis that we do. So I'll hand over to you, James, to close out, and we'll be back on the air next week.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right.
Thank you,
Dave. Yeah, thank you, Dave. I appreciate the great conversation.